In the previous session, we looked at basic principles of capital gains tax and UK trusts, and in particular on situations where a settlor makes a transfer into a trust and when the trustees sell assets to unconnected third parties. In this session, we shall look at further aspects of capital gains tax and UK trusts, starting with the situation when the trustees appoint assets to beneficiaries. Let us assume that we have a UK trust. The trustees enter into a deed of appointment whereby assets pass to a beneficiary. Here we have assumed that the assets concerned are a building and some shares. Under Section 71 of TCGA 1992, this is a disposal of the assets by the trustees at market value. In the absence of any claims to the contrary, a chargeable gain or allowable loss will arise to the trustees on the distribution. The beneficiary is deemed to have acquired the asset at the date of the appointment with a base cost equal to its market value. When the beneficiary eventually comes to sell the asset, taper relief will run from the date of the gift. In certain instances, gift relief can be claimed so as to defer the trustee's gain. If the assets being appointed to the beneficiary are business assets within the definition of Section 165, a gift relief claim can be made and the trustee's gain may be rolled over against the base cost of the beneficiary. Gift relief may also be claimed under Section 260 if the gift to the beneficiary is a chargeable transfer for inheritance tax purposes. This will be the case if an asset is being appointed out of a discretionary trust, as the appointment to the beneficiary will give rise to an IHT exit charge. It will also apply to post 22nd of March 2006 interest in possession trusts. We recapped on gift relief in the previous session. Note, however, that no gift relief is available under Section 260 if a distribution is made either within the first 3 months of the creation of the trust or within 3 months of a principal charge. On such occasions, there is no transfer of value for IHT purposes and therefore no exit charge. You will see here that normal gift relief rules apply. Where one person, in this case the trustees, makes a gift to another person, in this case the beneficiary, assuming the conditions in either Section 165 or Section 260 have been satisfied, the capital gain of the donor may be rolled against the base cost of the donee. In this instance, because the donee is an individual, gift relief must be claimed by way of a joint election between the trustees and the beneficiary. The time limit for a gift relief is 4 years from the end of the tax year in which the appointment took place. Such deemed disposals by the trustees will generally take place in two circumstances. The trust instrument will usually give the trustees authority to make discretionary distributions of capital assets to the beneficiaries. Under English law, the trustees have power, either under the trust instrument or under Section 32 of the Trustee Act of 1925, to advance capital to a beneficiary who has a presumptive entitlement to a share of the capital of the trust. In trust law, such a distribution cannot exceed 50% of the beneficiary's presumptive interest. A capital appointment by the trustees will also take place where a beneficiary becomes entitled to the trust capital, or a share of it, under the terms of the trust. This could happen, for example, where a life tenant of an interest in possession trust is entitled to the trust income until he reaches a specified age. Once the life tenant has attained the specified age, the capital of the trust will usually pass to the reversionary beneficiary, i.e. the remainder man. This causes there to be a deemed disposal of those trust assets by the trustees. If the trust was created before the 22nd of March 2006, gift relief will only be available under Section 165 if the assets concerned are business assets. However, if the trust was created on or after the 22nd of March 2006, gift relief will be available under Section 260 because the lifetime cessation of an interest in possession will generate an exit charge. The trustees will also distribute capital on the occasion where a beneficiary of an accumulation and maintenance trust becomes absolutely entitled to a share of trust assets on attaining a specified age. For instance, in a typical A&M arrangement, assume a beneficiary became entitled to income at the age of 25 and capital at the age of 35. When the beneficiary reaches his or her 35th birthday, the trustees will distribute his or her share of the trust capital, and this will be an occasion of charge for CGT purposes. We shall look at this in more detail later on in this session. A deemed disposal by the trustees will also take place on the death of the life tenant of an interest in possession trust. This is only the case if the interest in possession is treated as settled property for IHT purposes. It also applies on the death of a bereaved minor under the age of 18. When the life tenant dies, under Section 72 TCJ 1992, the trustees are deemed to have disposed of the entire trust capital at its market value at the date of the death of the life tenant. In most interest in possession arrangements, on the death of the life tenant, the trust capital thereafter passes to the remainder man. However, the trust deed could stipulate that a successive life interest is created on the death of the first life tenant. This means that instead of the capital passing to the remainder man, a second person thereafter becomes entitled to the income of the trust. In either situation, there is a deemed disposal at market value by the trustees under Section 72. Special rules apply to enable us to calculate the capital gains in this instance, and these are contained at Section 73 of TCJA 1992. We shall now look at these special rules. On the death of the life tenant, the trustees are deemed to have disposed of all of the trust assets at their market value, and a chargeable gain, or allowable loss, will arise. Under general principles, death is not treated as an occasion of charge for CGT purposes. Therefore, the gain accruing to the trustees on this deemed disposal will be exempt from CGT. However, Section 73 tells us that full exemption will not be available if a capital gain was deferred when the trust asset was originally transferred into the settlement. Therefore, when a life tenant of an interest in possession trust dies, the first question we must ask is, were any gains deferred when the trust assets were originally transferred into the trust? If the answer to this question is no, i.e. gift relief was not available to the settlor when he created the trust, no gain will arise to the trustees on the death of the life tenant. If the answer to this question is yes, i.e. when the settlor transferred the asset to the trust, gift relief was claimed, the death of the life tenant will give rise to a chargeable gain. In this case, we calculate the gain arising to the trustees, assuming that all trust assets were disposed of at their market value. However, the gain that is chargeable to capital gains tax is restricted to the amount of any previous gains which were held over. In effect, the maximum gain on the death of the life tenant is limited to any gift relief previously claimed. Let us illustrate this by way of an example. Assume a settlor transferred shares to an interest in possession trust in September 2005. The shares had a market value of £200,000 at that date. The shares originally cost £120,000, so the settlor is left with a capital gain of £80,000. Under normal principles, the trustees have acquired the shares in September 2005 with a base cost of £200,000. If we assume that the shares are business assets under Section 165, for example, they are shares in an unquoted trading company or shares in a personal trading company, gift relief will be claimed by the settlor, and the gain of £80,000 will be deferred. This gain will be rolled over and reduces the trustee's base cost to £120,000. The life tenant of the Interest in Possession Trust dies in July 2010, at which point the shares were worth £350,000. We need to consider the CGT position on the death of the life tenant. Remember that the death of the life tenant causes there to be a deemed disposal by the trustees of all trust assets at market value. The only asset in the trust in July 2010 was shares with a market value of £350,000. The shares have a base cost of £120,000, being the market value on the creation of the trust, less the held-over gain. After deducting this base cost, the trustees are left with a deemed capital gain in July 2010 of £230,000. This gain is normally exempt. However, We must ask ourselves whether a gain was deferred when the settlor transferred the shares into the trust. In this instance, the answer is yes. Therefore, on the death of the life tenant, the chargeable gain arising to the trustees is the gain on the deemed disposal, but restricted to the amount of the capital gains previously held over. We therefore treat the trustees as having disposed of all of the trust assets at market value, but the total chargeable gains in this instance cannot exceed £80,000. The trustees therefore have a capital gain of £80,000 in 2010-11. Capital gains tax is payable by the trustees on the gain. The capital gain chargeable on the trustees is £80,000. If this is the trustees' only chargeable gain, we will deduct the annual exemption and tax the excess at 28%. Note that a chargeable gain has only arisen because the settlor originally deferred a gain of £80,000 when he transferred the shares to the trust. If no gift relief had been available on the initial settlement, for example, if the shares had been in a quoted company, no chargeable gain would have arisen on the death of the life tenant. This is simply because the gain of £80,000 would have been charged to tax in the hands of the settlor at the time that he created the trust in September 2005. Whenever the trustees have made a chargeable gain on a deemed disposal, we should always consider the availability of gift relief. In the previous illustration, we calculated the chargeable gain arising to the trustees on the death of the life tenant. When the life tenant died in July 2010, the trustees were deemed to have disposed of all of the trust assets, in this case the shares, at their market value, and this produced a gain of £80,000. On the death of the life tenant, we'll assume that the shares pass to the remainder man. The remainder man is deemed to have acquired the shares with a base cost equal to their market value in July 2010, being £350,000. As the trustees have a gain of £80,000 on a deemed disposal, we will next consider the availability of gift relief. Gift relief will be available to defer the gain if the assets being transferred to the remainder man are business assets under Section 165. Gift relief will also be available under Section 260 if the transfer to the remainder man is a chargeable transfer for IHT purposes. As the transfer of shares to the remainder man will take place on the death of the life tenant, there will be a charge to inheritance tax because the shares will be deemed to form part of the life tenant's estate for IHT purposes. If you remember back to your IHT course, assets in a trust created before the 22nd of March 2006, in which the deceased had an interest in possession, form part of the death estate for IHT purposes. Therefore, in the majority of instances, the deemed gain that arises to the trustees on the death of the life tenant can be held over under Section 260 TCGA 1992. Section 260 gift relief will not be available if the remainder man is the spouse of the life tenant. If a life tenant dies and the capital of the trust thereafter passes to the spouse, this is an exempt transfer for IHT purposes and is not therefore chargeable to inheritance tax. In this instance, gift relief would only be available if the assets transferred qualified under Section 165. Finally, remember that under general principles of gift relief, if a gift qualifies for relief under both Section 260 and Section 165, Section 260 will take priority. Assuming that gift relief can be claimed, the trustee's capital gain will be rolled over and reduce the base cost of the remainder man. The remainder man will therefore acquire the shares in July 2010 with a base cost of £270,000. Note that for a valid gift relief claim to be made, it must be a joint election between the trustees and the remainder man. Let us now move on and consider distributions from accumulation and maintenance trusts, starting by looking at the tax case of Crowe and Appleby. This case involved beneficiaries of an A&M trust becoming absolutely entitled to a share of the trust capital, where the trust assets included land and buildings. Following Crowe and Appleby, where a beneficiary only has an undivided share in land, effectively a right to sale proceeds when the land is sold, there is no deemed disposal by the trustees until such time that all of the beneficiaries become entitled to the land as against the trustees. Let's illustrate this by way of an example. Here we have an accumulation and maintenance trust with two beneficiaries who we have called Amy and Ben. Under the terms of the trust deed, Amy becomes entitled to a share of the trust capital on reaching a specified age. Ben, being younger than Amy, does not have an entitlement to capital. At the date that Amy becomes entitled to capital, the trust assets are 10,000 shares and an investment property. On reaching the specified age, Amy is therefore entitled to 50% of the shares and 50% of the property. As shares are a divisible asset, the trustees will appoint 5,000 of the shares to Amy. This will give rise to a deemed disposal by the trustees at the date of the appointment. However, following the case of Crow and Appleby, as Amy has an undivided share of the land, i.e. the trustees still hold the property on trust for Ben, the trustees will not be deemed to have disposed of a 50% share in the property. Instead, a deemed disposal of the entire property will take place when Ben becomes entitled to his 50% share. In a bereaved minor's trust, when the beneficiary attains 18, he or she will thereafter become entitled to the trust capital. This is a deemed disposal by the trustees, potentially giving rise to a capital gain. However, gift relief is available under Section 260, even though there is no IHT charge. Where a beneficiary of an age 18 to 25 trust becomes entitled to trust capital, for example, at the age of 25, because there is an IHT exit charge at this point, any gains on transfers of assets to the beneficiary will also be eligible for gift relief under Section 260. Section 260 relief is also available where assets are appointed from an old A&M trust after April 2008, as such distributions give rise to an IHT exit charge. Let us now take a look at the situation where a deemed disposal by the trustees gives rise to a capital loss. Assume that in October 2010, a trust distributed an asset to a beneficiary. The asset had cost the trustees £100,000. At the time of the distribution, the asset was worth £80,000. As you'll see, this deemed disposal by the trustees gives rise to a loss of £20,000. The next question is, what can the trustees do with this loss? Under normal CGT principles, the trustees must first set this loss against any trust gains in the same tax year. There is no restriction to the way that the losses can be used because the trustees and the beneficiary are not connected persons for CGT purposes. However, this loss on the deemed disposal must be used in priority to any other trust losses in the year. If some of the loss is still remaining, the excess losses may be transferred by the trustees to the beneficiary. For example, in this instance, if the trustees had no other gains in the year, the loss of £20,000 would pass to the beneficiary. However, the beneficiary is only allowed to use this loss of £20,000 against gains on the disposal of this particular asset only. The beneficiary cannot use the loss against general capital gains. Assume that at some point in the future, the beneficiary sells the asset for £150,000. The beneficiary's base cost is the market value at the date the asset was appointed to him in October 2010, being £80,000. The beneficiary therefore has a gain of £70,000. Against this gain, the beneficiary can use the loss which was previously transferred to him by the trustees. This leaves a capital gain of £50,000. Note here that the loss can only be used to reduce a future gain made by the beneficiary on the same asset. Therefore, if the asset had continued to fall in value, no relief would have been available for the trustee's capital loss.